Greetings from John Paul Jones Arena and welcome to the Virginia Athletics Podcast. March Madness is upon us and we'll be pulling for the Hoos this weekend, but Tony Bennett's team is not the only one from UVA that's on a roll this spring. I'm Jeff White from VirginiaSports.com and my guest today is Lars Tiffany, head coach of the Virginia men's lacrosse team, which has won four straight and is ranked ninth nationally. Lars, great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
Jeff, doing really well. It's really great to be here and really enjoying coaching this group of men.
So before we look ahead, let me ask you about your most recent win. You were down 10-5 to Notre Dame in the third quarter, and things did not look promising for the home team, but your men ended up winning 13-11. What the heck happened?
Right. The first question you should be asking me, what are you coaching? What are you telling them in the first half?
First three quarters, yeah.
Because we've had other games that resembled what happened there. You know, in our last three wins, we've been down 4-4 and then 5 goals respectively against Notre Dame. And I'm very, very fortunate to have a group of men who are truly resilient and just enjoy the game and love playing. And for some reason, they don't get down on each other. You know, there's not a lot of finger pointing. It's more the thumbs. The thumbs point towards yourself. And I'm amazed at how positive the bench has become. Well, now it's built on itself.
Yeah, once you do it once, it's easier to do it a second time,
exactly.
Right, and then a third.
Exactly. So here we are, 7 games in, about the halfway point, and we've been losing in the second half of every game we've played so far. And we've actually given up more goals overall than we've scored. And yet we're 5-2, and it's because of that the courageousness, the heart, and the resilience of guys like Michael Krause, who waits till the end of the game to make his best plays and biggest moments, and you know Docs Aiken, who's there, and he's making big plays, and also our team defense. Again, I've got to do a better job preparing them for the first couple of quarters, but our team defense, as the season has progressed, has improved. But you can see it as the games have progressed. As you see the fourth quarter,
yeah,
we're limiting scores and. You know, certainly helped by goalie play behind us, but our team defense is getting better and better as they figure out an opponent as the game goes on.
Yeah, is it fair to say the defense in the second half, or at least the final 20 minutes against Notre Dame, might have been the best, maybe the best 20-minute stretch of defense they've played
in your
three games? I mean, I guess they had one goal in that, so it was odd, but it just seemed really sound. Positionally, the goalie play was good. Everything was good about it.
You're right, and the reason I can say that it felt like just probably our best defense of the year is because we actually didn't make any saves in the second half at all against Notre Dame. And so we've won games needing 24 saves from Patrick Birkinshaw,
right,
19 against Brown by Alex Rode. And then all of a sudden we win another game where we come from behind where we actually make no saves in the second half. And so we actually, the 6 men in front of Alex Rode really executed it well. We're getting better at sliding and supporting the Dodger. The men are more comfortable owning their matchups, but you know that help friendly defense, we see such a great job by Tony here, right here,
right,
at JPJ. We're having a better understanding of trusting each other, communicating, and sliding and supporting the Dodge.
After the overtime win against Brown on March the 10th, you made an interesting observation on the sideline at Klockner. You noted that your team was 4-2, but easily could have been 1-5. Now, after the comeback against Notre Dame, you're 5-2, but you're not that far away from 1-6. 4 straight comeback wins, as you noted, the first 3 of which went to overtime. I know you would prefer not to be living this dangerously and this dramatically. What's the key to, like, playing better in the first half?
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you had a definitive answer, you'd be doing it right.
Exactly. You know, but we do think about this. You know, for example, today is a Wednesday, and today's a scouting report day. And are we not doing a good enough job with the scouting report? Are we giving them too much information? Is there not enough information? What are we doing in the prep? Because we're doing some good game day adjusting, the men, and we're making adjustments in the second half, and so we're doing something positive there. But how can we come out faster and better? That's, yeah, I wish I knew an easy one. But you know, bottom line, when you're the University of Virginia, opponents are going to bring their best against you. You know,
mm-hmm,
my alma mater, Brown, came down here unintimidated by an ACC venue and our program, and they came out swinging, and they scored a bunch of goals, and they got on a roll. That's what we expect to see from our opponents, and But as we decipher exactly who they are, maybe we just got to do a better job with the scouting reports and understanding how what the opponent's strengths are instead of waiting until the halftime to talk about it.
This is year three at Virginia for you and your assistants, Kip Turner and Sean Kerwin. They were with you at Brown as well. Has your philosophy changed at all, evolved over the 3 years as you've become more familiar with your personnel, with the ACC and, you know, life at Virginia?
It has, you know. It's, first of all, the way we structure our practices, what time practices are, really getting in tune more with the UVA academic calendar. I've seen some similarities between Bronco and I when practices are going to be, we're both in our third years here. So it takes a little bit of institutional knowledge. In terms of on the field, yes, we've changed. You know, we came in here boasting, fast, frenetic. I will tell you, the new shot clock era that we now have in our sport has absolutely helped us tremendously understanding where we are with our possession time. It's a new metric to measure the men by, but we can now look and say, hey, Docs, we took that shot with 55 seconds on the shot clock. That's a little early for that shot. Now, if it's a wide open look, great. You know, and it's actually slowed us down. So many fans have said, oh, we can't wait for the shot clock. Great, speed the game up. It's probably tempered us a bit, and for the better. That's probably one of the things I'm most proud of with the men, the decision making. We have managed the shot clock better than most of our opponents, and I think we're one of the best shot clock teams. As we've seen, we scored the game winning goal of Syracuse in overtime with 2 seconds on that shot clock possession. Docs Aiken scores the final goal in the Notre Dame game with 54 seconds left, 1 or 2 seconds on the shot clock.
Right.
You know, we're starting to do a really good job of squeezing time off that clock. And then defensively, we earned 4 shot clock violations. We call them Tony Bennett closeouts against Notre Dame. And so we're doing a nice job of that. And so that has changed the way we play, to answer your question. And for the better, we were probably playing too fast. What we were doing at Brown in 2015 and 16 was insanity speed, but we were super, super talented.
Yeah.
We could have won playing fast. We probably could have won playing slow. We tried to bring that here, and we just weren't quite ready for it. And so I think we have found a good rhythm now.
You mentioned one of the rule changes, which is the implementation of the 80-second shot clock. Another one is teams now have 20 seconds to clear the ball. Your teams like to ride. This plays into your hands, doesn't it? The clearing just seems to have become an adventure in the sport, which is made for really entertaining lacrosse, and it's been good for your guys, right?
Exactly. The ride is back in the game of lacrosse. And so many rule changes over the history of the game of lacrosse until recently have been only making it easier to clear the ball. This new rule change with the 80-second shot clock with 20 seconds have to be over the midline, it is time to wreak some havoc, and we're just fortunate. We're really fortunate to use that football analogy. Our front four, three, you know, we're pressuring the quarterback with only three. Our attackmen, Michael Krause, Ian Laviano, and Matt Moore, they take a lot of pride in the intensity that they bring to the ride. And they're putting so much pressure on that what we're doing behind them, sometimes we're pulling the goalie and going with a true 10-man. Sometimes we're not. But those three are making the rest of us look good because there's errant passes being thrown, there's loose balls, and we're picking them up, and we're able to get what we call ride backs and be able to go right back and play some transition and keep the all ball on offense. It's been it was absolutely critical in the Brown game.
Right.
You know, Brown had that 4-goal lead, and we were hammering them, getting a lot of shots on cage, but Phil Goss was making a ton of saves, but we kept getting the ball back. We kept giving ourselves other chances because of the ride, and we saw that in overtime as well. So it's something that I think for college lacrosse fans overall, it's got to be super exciting because it's not just, okay, the goalie made a save. There's going to be a ton of guys subbing out, ton of guys subbing in, and they're going to play offense starting in about 30 seconds from now. No, it's who knows where that ball's going to end up.
Right. You play Johns Hopkins at Homewood Field in Baltimore, 6 p.m. on Saturday. This is a legendary, historic series that began in 1904. This will be the 73rd consecutive season that UVA and Hopkins will have met in men's lacrosse. It may, however, be the last game between the two schools for a while, right? What's the immediate future of the series?
Yeah, this is obviously a huge game this Saturday up at Homewood. This iconic rivalry for the game of lacrosse. We'll not be playing a regular season game next year. The ACC men's lacrosse schedule is shifting so that the regular season games are now at the end of the season. You know, as you know, currently we play Syracuse in early March. We played Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
While some of the ACC schools haven't even had a men's lacrosse game yet. So the ACC schedule is pushing towards the end of the year. Well, that means we had to try to make some changes with, and unfortunately, the Hopkins game, we tried to try to find a new date. And Coach Petromala and I have yet to find a date. We'll keep working on it, you know, because we want to bring this rivalry back. Hopkins Navy was lost for a year or two, mm-hmm. and that's an old historic rivalry, but that's back. So hopefully we can get it back as soon as possible. It's no small consolation, though. We've been able to add Maryland. So John Tillman's Maryland Terrapins will be on the schedule in 2020.
The winner of this game takes possession of or retains possession of the Doyle Smith Cup, which was created in memory of the legendary publicist and lacrosse statistician who had deep ties to both Hopkins and UVA. Did you cross paths with Doyle early in your career?
I did. Early in my career, I got to meet him and getting to know some of his family members currently who come out for the game and present the trophy to the winning team. And Doyle's legendary. You know, a lot of people never met him, but, you know, you have phone conversations.
Yeah.
You know the name. He was a source. You know, so it was, you know, playing 30 years ago as I did. Sometimes you wouldn't know after a Saturday game till Monday or Tuesday how the other teams in the top 10 did. You know, it would take a little while to find out the scores. Because way back in the day,
pre-internet.
Pre-internet. People would just call and report the scores to Doyle. So if you wanted scores, you'd call Doyle. And, you know, now as I'm walking off the field, you know, Virginia Notre Dame game, you know, I can't even get to the to see Tara and Charlotte in the post game before you hear people in the stands. Oh, did you hear Towson beat so-and-so? And did you hear Duke beat so-and-so? Yeah. It's amazing how quick the results come out. Doyle was – he was the glue when we needed – as a sport, we needed a lot of help in terms of reporting scores and knowing what's going on, and then also the rules and
statistical. And then creating uniformity. Yes, that's the word.
With the stats of the game. So he was certainly a pioneer that we leaned on heavily, and his impact is still felt today.
You played at Brown for Dom Starja, who was your predecessor here in Virginia. Dom was at Clockner with the Twins for Brown's visit this month. I know that game was a little bit awkward for both of you, given the connections you and Dom have with both programs. Did you get a chance to talk to him about that at all?
Yeah, we talked a little bit after the game. It was so great to have Dom back. It's the first time he's been back for a game.
Yeah.
And it was great to have him. He had the Twins there as well. I think for both of us, it was wonderful with all the other alums. So many Brown fans and Brown alums came back for that game. And they were treated, obviously, to a fantastic lacrosse contest and finish. It's important to me personally and to so many others to have Dom be back involved with the program. And so that was a big first step. And we're excited about further steps. I know it can't be easy for him. He's poured 24 years of his life into this university, into this community. And it's incredible success that he created here with his four national championships and so many other Final Four appearances and ACC titles. It's really important for the alums, the players, the current players, the families who he recruited, much of the team that I'm coaching now. You know, we want him back, and hopefully we'll see those further steps.
Let me ask you about a young man who is really the consummate UVA student athlete, Ryan Conrad. Ryan was a third-team All-American in 2017. He missed most of last season with a knee injury. He's back this year, and he looked fantastic. Having been had him and not had him, what is the impact of Ryan Conrad on the team?
It's funny, like the first couple games of the season, he wasn't back to the normal Ryan Conrad yet. And it fit into what Rebecca Vazo and the rest of the training staff tells us. It takes about a year.
Takes a while, yeah.
Takes a year. And he hurt himself March 4, 2018. And there it was, just about a year, March 2, 2019, in the Carrier Dome, was when he finally reemerged back to his old former self. Because he'd had a couple games, and he was just okay. Depth chart, he was pretty low. He was frustrated. And then what he did in that second half of the Syracuse game is he flew in, as we had that four-goal deficit, as he flew in off that face-off wing and just would not be denied. He kept giving us possession after
possession.
Ground
ball, yeah.
And just allowed us to rally and make that comeback, tie it up, and go to overtime. And he's made some big-time plays for us. And I was actually reading some notes getting ready for Notre Dame last week, getting ready for Hopkins this week. I do a post-game report after every game, and I there's several notes in there. Gosh, we miss Ryan Conrad. We miss Ryan. What are we going to do without Ryan? And I'm so glad I don't have to worry about that till next year again.
He was Ryan was primarily a defensive midfielder in 2017. You using him a little differently this year?
Yeah, we're putting him more on offense. Yeah. Defense is not inherent to Ryan Conrad. It is not how he is genetically disposed.
Right.
You know, it's sort of, we talk to people like, okay, so when you watch Tony Bennett's basketball team, are you watching the, from the defensive perspective or the offensive perspective? And the offensive guys tend to watch the offense. Defensive guys watch it from the slide schemes. And Ryan's an offensive guy, you know. And we ask him to play some defense, and he can certainly clear the ball really well and can transition. But it's just not his natural strong suit. So he plays some defense for us, but it's we've got some other defensive midfielders: John Fox, Dave Smith, Corey Harris, and Matt Jama, who do a better job there. So that's why you're not going to see Ryan on the field for 60 minutes like we did in 2017.
One of your first-year attackmen, Peyton Cormier, suffered an injury back in the fall that will keep him out all this season. Matt Moore was a middie as a freshman last season. Now he's starting on attack. Did you move Matt there because of the injury to Peyton, or was that in the works all along?
That's a good question. It was stimulated by the injury to Peyton.
Yeah.
And not that Peyton had earned the starting spot yet in November, mid-November when he was injured, but we had after Peyton did get hurt, we stepped back and said, okay, all right, we're gonna miss Peyton and his ability to score. And then it really says, well, wait a minute, do we want just one dodging threat? You know, mm-hmm. Ian Laviano's not a dodging threat. He's right. A heck of a scorer. He's got great hands. But do we just want to put all the pressure again on Michael Krause?
Michael Krause, yeah.
And because the third starter last year, Mike DiMario, was not much of a dodging threat. He was a great scorer himself, though. But so it just sort of, you know, this might be the time. Let's try Matt Moore there. I remember when I first got the job, I called Matt Moore. He's a recruit at the time. You know, what position do you like, Matt? We're all guessing attack because everyone wants to be an attackman. You know,
yeah.
Us defensemen, we weren't good enough to play attack, you know. And Matt Moore told me he wanted to be a middie. I was like, really? You want to be a middie? okay, so we went with that, and obviously he had a good first year. But you know, he brings another dodging threat, that a presence, and so now defenses have to, you know, sort of say, all right, who's more dangerous, and so who do they put their number one cover guy on? And some teams have put it on Krause, and some teams have put it on Matt Moore, And so, you know, we're disappointed, obviously, to have Peyton get injured, but it may have stimulated something that's, in the long run, helped us. It's absolutely helped us our ride.
Right.
That I know. Matt Moore is a relentless rider, and, you know, he had a big takeaway with 30 seconds left against Notre Dame, the Notre Dame midfielder trying to clear the ball, and he brings us a better pass rush, in a sense.
Alex Rode started your first three games in the goal. Patrick Birkinshaw started the next two, and then you went back to Alex at halftime of the Syracuse game. Great comeback in that. He's been in there ever since. Did the time away help him? Did he come back a different, better goalie?
He did. What we've really seen Alex do in this last month or so is talk. Mm-hmm. He's a quiet person, and he's always been somewhat communicative on the field, mm-hmm. but he's kept it at a minimum. What we've seen lately is an explosion of talk, even a little bit of, you know, jawing at some of the shooters and in practice, not in games, but just get a little more comfortable, which is really making the rest of us happy because he seemed to be a bit anxious before, and now he's growing more comfortable in the cold.
He was young last year too, right?
He was, yeah.
Being a
first-year starter is not easy, but we're seeing him, a persona evolve around him that's more – that builds more confidence because he just seems more confident in his own skin. He's talking more to the team. He's only talked once to the team defense with me in the huddle, but that one time was more than he did all last year. And so it's exciting to see what he's doing there. And now I will tell you, I'm fortunate that both goalies have played well to make our staff look good. You know, when you pull goalies, and certainly at halftime, or you start a freshman at Princeton, mm-hmm. you know, it's a coaching business. You expose yourself to second guessing. Well, fortunately, they've been in there and they've made a lot of saves. So no matter who we went with, they've made us look like it was the right decision.
Yeah, 7 regular season games, 5 of them are at Kloeckner, including the final two. Then comes the ACC tournament, which has a different format this year, right?
Yes.
All 5 teams are in it. And then in the championship game is at the site of the higher seed, right, which is something new.
A really exciting venue. The ACC conference office is the one that recommended this or suggested
this. And I guess
this.
The big difference is the semis and the final are a week apart instead of being – 2 days apart.
Exactly.
Like last year.
Very different format than ever been done before. The ACC has been struggling this for years. You know, when you have an odd number of teams, five teams, what do you do? And last year we could not find an extra team, which has in the past been Penn or Brown.
Penn or Brown, yeah.
Just couldn't find that team. So there, unfortunately, Joe Bresci's North Carolina team, there was no one to play. And so we said, we've got to fix this. And so the model we have now is the four plays the five Thursday at the site, which is North Carolina this year, so down to Chapel Hill. And then the winner of that game will play the one seed on Saturday while the two plays the three seed on that Saturday, April 27, I believe. And then you're right, from there, it's readjusted. The two teams left, the higher seed is the host, and that's a really exciting opportunity for someone to on their home field to have the ACC championship game. And I just got to think the attendance is going to be better. The ACC tournament for men's lacrosse has not drawn well. Most men's lacrosse tournaments don't draw well. It's just men's basketball ACC draws really, really well, and the rest of us pale in comparison. So having it on a home field site, I think it's going to be really exciting for the game.
The quality of play could well be better, too. I remember last year when the tournament was here, you played the late game on Friday night, had a big emotional win over Syracuse.
Over Syracuse, right.
Yeah, over Syracuse. Then you're coming back and playing much less than 48. You know, it was like 40 hours later, playing an afternoon game on Sunday. You know, you could see your guys didn't have the same pep in their step for whatever reason. So you got a week to prepare for the game.
It will present a better game. But, you know, I get a lot of credit to Notre Dame on that day. They had lost the ACC championship game the year before in 2017. So they were on a mission. They were there to win the ACC championship. We were giddy and ecstatic that we'd beaten Syracuse and we were in the championship game. And you saw the difference in the style and the way the game that unfolded. It's an exciting venue. You know, we'll see how long it lasts. You know, there's already been talk about maybe changing it in the future. It's a 2-year model, so we'll see how it goes moving forward.
All right, final question before I let you go. My old office and the rest of University Hall are soon to be history, to be imploded. Your locker room has moved to the training grounds, right? How has that switch been for you guys?
It's been smoother than I anticipated. I'm really fortunate, starting with Carla Williams and her lead, but the support people under her, they've really done a great job for what could be a difficult situation for a few years. They've spiced up the training grounds where our locker rooms are. The flow is smooth. The nutrition there, the athletic trainers, another weight room there, an academic lounge. It's, you know, my first impression was this was going to be, you know, not so great, but we've actually really liked how it's spaced out and laid out. And I think for the situation we have, I couldn't be more excited about the future. So what we have now is sustainable and manageable for 4 years. And starting to think about the plans and what's coming forward. I hope I'm here. I hope I'm not on a recruiting trip that day the U-Haul gets imploded. I really want to see that go down.
Yeah, that'll be something. Well, anyway, thanks again for your time. Best of luck at Homewood on Saturday. Very considerate of you to schedule this game for a Saturday, so hopefully it's between Friday and Sunday basketball games, and we can all watch Saturday night.
Assuming that the basketball team continues to be successful, we were fortunate again next weekend, too, because we play Friday, Sunday here at Klockner the following weekend, and apparently that regional is a Thursday, Saturday.
It is. So anyway, thanks for your time. For information on men's lacrosse, men's basketball, and all our teams, visit virginiasports.com. The date of my next podcast will depend in part on how things shake out in the NCAA basketball tournament, but I'll be back with another one as soon as my schedule permits. Until then, thanks for listening, and go Hoos.